across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. I'm the officer of the deck today. We've got some great programs for you. I think you'll find very interesting. We always want to remind you, you can find more about Veterans Radio at its Facebook site or at the web. VeteransRadio.org is our new URL, VeteransRadio.org, where we're on the web 24/7. You can find a lot of our podcasts there as well. We post new ones every Tuesday, so you can get a new story, a new interview, something you didn't know before by going to VeteransRadio.org. And before we get started, we want to thank our sponsors. First up, we want to thank National Veteran Business Development Council, NVBDC.org. It was established to certify both service-disabled and veteran-owned businesses. You'll find out how they can help your business by going to NVBDC.org. We want to thank Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans fights for veterans' disability rights all across the nation. You can reach them at 800-693-4800 or on the web at legalhelpforveterans.com. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today U.S. Army retired Lieutenant Colonel Tracy Farrell. We're going to talk about the Wounded Warrior Project and women veterans in particular. But Tracy, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks so much, Jim. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and all your listeners.
Well, let's talk about your Army career. How did a nice girl like you from Notre Dame, the University of Notre Dame, with a Bachelor's of Science in Mathematics, end up in the U.S. Army?
Yeah, so I come from a line of individuals who served. Both my grandfathers served in World War II, one in the, it was the Army Air Corps at that time, later the Air Force, and one in the Army. And then my father served 22 years as well, field artillery, and then he did operations, kind of like staff work more so. And I'm the oldest of five, so I had to find a way to pay for college. Hence an ROTC scholarship to Notre Dame. And then from there, thought I was going to do 4 years and get out, as most of us do. Maybe not most of us, but many of us do. You know, we all think.
Oh, yeah. Nobody goes in to be a lifer. Yeah. Yeah.
No, very few people think they're going to be lifers. And then at every point in my life, it was just so many great opportunities were presented through the military or through assignments that I ended up staying 22 and a half years.
Well, let's...
And as we talked earlier, I had some amazing, amazing assignments.
Well, let's talk about those, yeah. Because this ties back into one of the findings in the report, which is about, hey, would you recommend joining up to folks? And one of the reasons people would is you get this great opportunity in terms of leadership, responsibility, and travel. So tell us about yours.
Yeah, I ended up, my first assignment was in Germany. And then I've also ended up in Korea, and I had battalion command in Hawaii, and I ended my career in D.C. And, of course, there were some iterations of training deployments and spent some time in Hungary, Croatia, as well as Iraq. But just for me, I think I look at the person I was when I graduated college. And the self-confidence I think I was lacking at that point, and then how I progressed over the 22 years and who I am today. And I can't say I wouldn't have been that person had I not joined the military, but the military definitely had an amazing impact on my confidence, my knowledge, my ability to lead others, and just allowed me to see the world and other cultures and even other portions of the United States. As you might know, each portion of the United States is a little different as well.
Well, you know, those of us who never got a duty assignment in Hawaii love how you just slip that in around everything else. But, you know, we are all jealous of a duty assignment in Hawaii. So
I think each of us have somewhere we're jealous of. I always wanted to come to Colorado Springs. So then after I retired from the military, that was the place I chose to move to. And I've lived here. I call Colorado Springs my home and the first place I ever chose, because the rest of my life, I was following my father or following the military or following a job. And Colorado Springs I chose, and this is now my home, and I love it with all my heart.
Well, that's great. And along the way, I should mention, she picked up a master's from Long Island University in leadership. So
I did. I got to be at West Point for a while and as a tactical officer. And that was part of the job requirement, and it really was a great opportunity.
And that word keeps coming up, opportunity. And again, this will factor back into some of the findings of the report we're talking about that's been issued here this fall in 2023. But Tracy, for those who maybe don't really understand what Wounded Warrior Project is, or maybe have just seen TV commercials which may or may not be informative, tell us a little bit about Wounded Warrior Project and the efforts that it undertakes.
Sure. So Wounded Warrior Project is an organization that has over 240,000 registrants members. And we're nationwide, and we're even in Germany at Landstuhl, where there's a medical center, as you know. And we serve warriors and their families who were injured or ill as a part of their service to the military. And that doesn't have to be physical injuries. I think that's the biggest misconception. Even though we have these ongoing dialogues about traumatic brain injury or post-traumatic stress or anxiety as a result of service, a lot of people think that Wounded Warrior Project focuses on the physical injuries, and we do, absolutely do. But making sure that somebody who transitions from service is able to thrive in their communities in a holistic manner, whether it be focusing on their financial needs, their mental health needs, or their physical needs, or even just societal, wanting to connect with others, that is the focus of Wounded Warrior Project. And the key thing is that due to the generosity of the American public, it's at no cost at all to the warriors and family members who participate. And it's huge. It's been 20 years now, which is absolutely amazing to me. But this is our 20th year anniversary, and we're going strong, and we're still looking ways to be innovative with the population that we have dedicated ourselves to serve.
And I should mention that Tracy Farrell is the Program Partnership and Operational Vice President for the Wounded Warrior Project. So we're talking to somebody at the top of the food chain, which is always good because you get the real deal of what's going on. And what was interesting to me, and I wanted to make sure we got this out to a wide audience for Veterans Radio, is that you released the Wounded Warrior Project, WWP, released its Women Warriors Report, which highlights the sort of unique experiences and challenges of women veterans. So why don't you go ahead and tell us about this survey and some of the results from it?
Sure. So just to provide a little bit of background, Wounded Warrior Project has been doing surveys of our population for years now. And a few years back, we acknowledged that while women represent the fastest growing population in both the military and veteran communities, we were seeing some disparities between the results of our male population and our woman population. And so we launched this initiative to try and dig into the information and the data that we have about women warriors in particular. And so this report that was released in September is based on the responses of 5,000 women warriors, as well as roundtable discussions that happen both virtually and in person across the United States. And what we've found is that wounded women warriors, and you have to remember, this is our population, the wounded women warriors, we face unique challenges while we serve in the military and then as we transition into civilian life. And those could be with regards to financial wellness, access to care, mental wellness, social health, military transition, and military sexual trauma. And so this report, which is absolutely beautiful, not only in its layout, but in its information, not only gives those statistics and that data, but it gives some quotes from women warriors, and it gives some recommendations on what we can do as a society, not just legislatively, not just with the VA, not just with veteran service organizations, but what all of us working together can do to better serve women warriors as they transition.
Yeah, I think that there's a couple of points here. One is we all relate to anecdotal stories where somebody we know, or in this instance in the report, the female veterans there, and there's generally a quote or a story you can relate to. But it helps. It really helps in thinking these things through when you have the data and you begin. You know, you talk to 5,000 folks, you've got a big data set, and you're going to get real solid information out of that, aren't you?
Definitely. And I think what resonated the most with me, just because of my service, was the conversations around the military to civilian transition process and how we might enhance it. Include ongoing support. You know, I think probably a lot of the listeners know I approached transition as like this singular day or month in my life. I was just going to get out of the Army, take off the uniform, put on something in my closet, and be absolutely successful else, you know, after that. But it's a process. And ensuring that the support is there through TAPS, which I know both DOD and VA have been looking at this the whole transition assistant program and what we can provide through that, but also afterwards. Who's there in the community that has reached back and you can ask questions and you can connect with, for women warriors in particular, who's in your community that you can connect with and ask questions about? That really resonated with me, as well as the challenges with accessing care in the VA healthcare system. The VA has been doing an amazing job in expanding their women's healthcare. It's not across the United States, and there's still some opportunities to leverage community-based resources and even telehealth to address some of the barriers of care that we're hearing about from our women veterans.
And it's those kind of key findings based on data and based also on stories people can relate to. They help policymakers, don't they? You did a stint in Washington, D.C. You did a stint on the Congressional Hill. This information has a role to play in shaping policy, doesn't it?
Oh, 100%. And not just from let's give you the information, but in twofold. One, in the efforts that our government and community relations team does in working with members of Congress to develop legislation based on the data, based on information that we've garnered from the VA, but then also just the opportunities for our women warriors to go to Capitol Hill and talk about what they're experiencing and then show the data behind that. When we released this report back in September, we brought 50 women warriors together and we had them go to Capitol Hill and talk with the representatives and talk with the staff members there and share their experiences, but also share the report to make sure that it's not just me talking about myself, it's me talking for women nationwide.
One of the other, and that's so important, and one of the other findings that was in your key areas dealt with financial wellness, which I think is worth exploring some, because people don't really talk about, they talk about transition, how hard that is, and it may take years to find the job you really want to be doing. But financial wellness, there's such a change. When I'm in the military, that paycheck shows up every time. My expenses are kind of covered. There's not the same sort of market-driven financial pressure. So talk to us about how that manifested itself to become a key area.
So we have found that women warriors have a higher education rate. They pursue college, they pursue advanced degrees at a higher rate than their male peers, but they have higher unemployment rates as well. This report specifically identified 10% of women warriors were unemployed by 6.3%. And the reason for this for many of them was that childcare and family responsibilities are the top barrier to their employment. Another fact that was really saddening for me was that nearly half report living paycheck to paycheck. And 2 out of 5 lack the confidence to cover a $1,000 emergency. And as you mentioned, these are women who had these support systems and had financial assistance and had paychecks coming in every month. And so we think a couple things can help. One, there needs to be a little more research into why this is so. This isn't just societal. We can't just say, well, women are behind men in every aspect of employment, because that's not true right now. So where are some areas that societal-wise we can look at? But also we need to invest in mentorship and transition support services for women veterans. And these can be through organizations such as the Department of Labor or grants to community organizations, focus specifically on women's career planning and employment, and not at the point of transition that I mentioned
but
earlier.
Early on, financial management.
Prior to launching oneself into being a civilian, we should be thinking about things like this.
Yeah, I think that was that sort of popped out as an issue where, like, people don't really talk about that, but it's, you hear about it kind of quietly, sort of buried in the transition problem, but it's really maybe a financial problem. One of the things that we've talked about here on Veterans Radio, and we're talking to Tracy Farrell, who's a VP at the Wounded Warrior Project. We're talking specifically about a recently released Women Warriors report. Tracy, one of the things we find is that on Veterans Radio, when we talk to folks, is when you're in the military, you have a network. You've moved from base to base. You know people from this here and there. But when you transition out, you don't have maybe that network. And is you have to create a new network. Is that the social health issue that your report found as a key area?
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just do the numbers real quick. So 10% of the population are women veterans, right? Or 10% of the veteran population are women. Excuse me, I misquoted that. But, and then less than 1% actually serve these days. And so while we find that there will be a growing population, and it's going to be up to 18% by 2040 of veterans are women, we don't find that women veterans wear their status on their sleeve as much as male veterans do. And part of that is because they don't feel that society acknowledges their service. Right. A personal story. I actually went somewhere that was military oriented and showed a card that said veterans were to get in at a reduced rate or a free rate by myself. And I was asked where my husband was.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where the veteran was. Right. We have to stop that question from coming out of people's mouths. We have to acknowledge that both men and women serve in the military now and are proud of their service and should stand up for being a veteran and connecting with other veterans through opportunities that are offered within our communities.
And some groups are better at that, like Women's Marine Association, WMA, is really a pretty robust group because they're a pretty small, hearty group. But I don't think our VSOs in general are that well at welcoming folks. But you can just see how that network needs to be there. But you got to be able to know where the other people in the network are.
You have to know how to look for them, right? It's just, and that was another one of our recommendations was actually through the transition process to have a women-focused leg of it to tell what health system the VA offers you, where you might find other women in your communities that are veterans if you wish to reach out, and what specific issues and solutions women veterans have come across during their time.
We have to do that because we need to recruit more women, we need to recruit more men, and there's a big recruiting problem in the country as a whole. I guess it comes and goes, right? After 9/11, all kinds of people join up. After a 20-year war, military is having a tough time. Every branch hitting the recruiting numbers. So making things better for women veterans is really making things better for women to enter the military, and actually that's a national security issue. Things have changed a lot since you went in I think it was 1994.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more to do, and you mentioned, and I don't want to pass over it, military sexual trauma, exposure to toxins, and other problems that are in the news today. What'd your report find about those sorts of things and how they're impacting women veterans?
There's quite a bit of attention on military sexual trauma and ensuring that when anyone who has experienced military sexual trauma transitions from the military to the VA, that they don't, one, that they have a smooth transition, whether it be through a peer leader helping them through that process, or in the sharing of the information between DOD and the VA. What we hear most of the times right now is that as women and men transition between their providers, whether it be a mental health provider or a actual medical provider or some other sort of PC, primary care provider, they're repeating their story over and over and over again. And re-traumatization is a big thing. And so we need to find a way so that women and men don't have to do that. They don't have to keep on reliving or repeating their story, that is captured somewhere and shared across that, and that they're escorted through the process of benefits and healthcare.
Yeah, and I think this is where the VA would step in and say, hey, we hear these stories. We know how to handle them. We don't want you to have to repeat them, but maybe your private practitioner, this is all brand new to them. So there's an interesting issue of where you'll be most comfortable getting your medical care and receive the best medical care. So those are challenges as well that are kind of floating through your key findings.
There are. And the VA and Congress is very interested in that topic and has proposed legislation and solutions. And so my hope is that we will see movement in that in the next 1 to 2 years for sure.
We're talking to Lieutenant Colonel Tracy Farrell, U.S. Army retired, who's vice president with Wounded Warrior Project, about the Women Warriors report that was just issued. And what's great about the report is that it not only does this great big data collection and identifies issues, but then makes these recommendations that we've been talking about. But one of the things that I want to highlight is how women warriors reacted to the idea of, would you recommend, and I always ask this question, somebody, would you recommend to a family member or friend that, to join up? And that's really the question you guys were kind of getting, asking folks, and their responses are interesting. Can you talk about them?
Yeah, I think it's, so one, we have to remember that the women who are part of Women Warrior Project, or Wounded Warrior Project, sorry, too many W's. Let me just say that right off the bat. The Wounded Warrior Project are those who have been injured as part of their service, right? And so their perception may be a little different. But many of them actually said, yes, I would still recommend service because of what it taught me, what we talked about at the top of this.
Right, this ties right back into your experiences.
Yeah, right back into the person that the military made me, even despite the injuries that I have experienced or the trauma that I am still living through. I believe that this was a good organization for me at that time of my life. And I'm always heartened to hear that, right? I think for me, especially having been a battalion commander, I really wanted to make sure that the men and the women who joined my organization felt welcome and that they had the ability to grow in the direction that they chose. And with military police, many of them decided FPI or their local community policing or some other sort of investigative careers after they left the military. And I'm happy to hear that many of the women who served during the same time I did felt that within their units as well.
Well, it's interesting because the reason for recommendations are really it's a long list. It's not only the benefits package and the equal pay, but the things like the GI Bill that gets you more education, mm-hmm. which certainly you get to take a part of while you're in service, but even more importantly for some is after, which you're developing all these skills that you've talked about in terms of leadership. We've talked about the travel that goes with it. So there are a lot of very positive aspects of military service beyond being part of something bigger than yourself and serving your country, aren't there?
Yeah, and I think a lot of times we focus on the leadership aspect, but there's some skill sets that are learned as well. You know, I think of my mechanics, or I think of my logistics specialist that helped me along the way, or even the intelligence specialists that were part. They may not have been, you know, they may have done one term and not have gotten to a leadership level aside from pure leadership. But those skills that they, I would hope that those skills that they earned and acquired while in the service assisted them in finding out what they wanted to do later in life.
Yeah, those certainly have value that you have to realize that and put it forth. You mentioned the situations that you've been in and the trauma that you're still kind of going through. Talk about why being a part of a Wounded Warrior Project, and particularly if you're a wounded women warrior, this is something you ought to take a look at and explore.
I think it goes back to what we talked about earlier, Jim, about finding your community, right? About finding people who have been through similar experiences that you feel comfortable about talking about your experiences with, and feel that there's a safe space where you won't be judged. In every single one of our face-to-face programmings, whether it be physical health and wellness, alumni that's focused on connection and social opportunities, or our Project Odyssey, which are mental health-based adventure programming, there's a focus on a cohort about meeting people in your community who have experienced what you've experienced, that you can feel comfortable with, whether it be you need to cuss about something, because, you know, sometimes we put filters on ourselves. If you need to right. let that aspect out, if you want to talk about a personal moment, or if you just want to talk about what you saw in Hawaii, Germany, Iraq, Korea, and have these key points of your lives be discussed, that's what you find in a VSO, and that's definitely what you find in Wounded Warrior Project. And through those connections and through that examination of your own life, we can lead to better healing.
If there's a veteran out there or a family member of a veteran who thinks, maybe my guy or gal ought to get a little more into this, it might help on the social front and a lot of other things, can you give us the website and how they get themselves involved?
Sure. So the website is www.woundedwarriorproject, all one word. It's long, I know, .org. And on there, you will find information about the organization, the specific programming we offer, the opportunities that there are. And to register, all you need is to call or do it online, and all you need is proof of service. And from there, we will help work with you to make sure you're connected with a resource in your community.
It's really a well-done professional website. You'll find it helpful with information. So I'd tell folks to go poke around. It's woundedwarriorproject.org. It's warrior singular, no S, woundedwarriorproject.org. And it's worth looking into. And Tracy Farrell, we really appreciate the time that you've given us today to explore the report and data that you've done on women warriors, and really appreciate you talking to the Veteran Radio audience.
Thanks, Jim. I'd just like to point out, if anybody wants to look at the report, it itself is online as well. And so if you want to dig into one of the areas we talked about, please do so.
Thank you.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows
by visiting us at veteransradio.org. That's veteransradio.org.
And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
We again want to thank our national sponsors, the National Veterans Business Development Council, NVBDC.org, VA Ann Arbor Health Care System, the Vietnam Veterans of America Charles S. Kettles Chapter, Ann Arbor, Michigan, VFW Graf O'Hara Post 423 in Ann Arbor, and the American Legion Prescorn Post 46, also in Ann Arbor. We appreciate all your support. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsor level, and continue to support keeping Veterans Radio on the air. And until next time, you are dismissed.